York.
And while we lament the kind of leadership and the politics and the stuff in this particular city, there's amazing organizations, and HeLa is one such organization, the Healthy Living Alliance, and essentially a coalition of civil society organizations advocating for equitable access to affordable, nutritious food in South Africa by building a more just food system. And the project assistant, Eunice Monso, joins us on the line. Welcome, Eunice.
For having me,
it's great to have you, Eunice. I think just in terms of the conversations that we've had, we know that there's not a food shortage, that there's enough food in this country to prevent the kind of hunger and malnutrition that is just too commonplace in this particular country. And it's great that civil society organizations are working together on addressing this particular problem. Just how far are we in addressing that, getting all the food that we have in this country to the people that really need it?
So, like you mentioned, we are part of a coalition of civil society organizations who, in fact, are advocating for this, to have a more just food system. Because we know that the food is there, but, you know, most of this food is in supermarkets, and it's not as easily accessible to the people who, for instance, people in the townships and rural areas, you know, food is taken almost away from them in the farms which are close to them, taken to supermarkets where they're made so much more expensive and less accessible to them.
Okay, and we speak in our conversation today specifically around policy changes that you require to prevent South Africa's childhood obesity. So at the one time, children are lacking nutrition in this particular country. On the other side, there's childhood obesity because we are not feeding them the right things as well. So you are calling for policy changes. What exactly would they entail?
So, like you mentioned, it's children are being more and more exposed to ultra-processed foods. So they're eating foods which don't have the right nutrition per se. So we're calling for policy changes. We've got the health promotion levy, which you might be aware of, which calls for sugar-sweetened beverages to be taxed, and which they are taxed, but we're calling for an increase in the health promotion levy because we've seen that it has been effective over the past few years in raising revenue. And a recent study in the UK also shows that it's been quite effective in reducing childhood obesity. There has been a decrease of about 8% in obesity with children in the UK. And I mean, as you look at 2018, that's the same year that it was that the health promotion levy came to be effective in the country. And another policy change.
Maybe you should just tell us what the health promotion levy is and how it benefits.
Okay. So the health promotion levy is a tax on sugar sweetened beverages. So it taxes about 2% on every gram of sugar per 100 milliliter of sugar sweetened beverage. So sugar sweetened beverage, a more simple term would be cold drink, that we eat fizzy drinks, that is. So the sugar tax works similar to other health taxes, in that it increases the retail price of sugar-sweetened beverages so that consumers are less likely to buy them because then the sugar-sweetened beverage would be more expensive. So this is to try and reduce the harms of sugar-sweetened beverage on the health of South Africans.
And has it reduced harm? Because why are we talking about this? Has it reduced harm? Has it reduced obesity or not?
So since it has been enacted, there has been reformulation of these sugar-sweetened beverages. And it has also increased, it has created 3 billion rand in revenue, and it has also reduced the consumption of sugary drinks by about 28%. And this has reduced the individual daily sugar consumption from sugary drinks by 50%. And we know that with a decrease in the consumption of sugary drinks, it decreases the likelihood of developing diabetes.
Okay. Then there's the issue of load shedding as well, that is kind of sending us to junk food, to fast food in the absence of power and you know, kind of making our food like we would normally do at home. Is load shedding also contributing, powering obesity and malnutrition in the poorest, amongst the poorest in the country?
It honestly is, because like you mentioned, for instance, if we take an example of a woman who works a domestic worker, for instance, who leaves home very early, you find that in the mornings you leave and there's load shedding. You find that whatever she gives, she can't make proper food for her children. So she would then give her children money to buy something from a taxi rank or at school or on their way to school. And you'd find that what they eat would be ultra-processed foods, and which are cheap to be eaten, like Fetkoek, for instance, Magwinya, you know. And you'd find that that lady would come back home at 6 p.m. or whatever time, and you'd find that there would either be load shedding already or there would not be enough time left before load shedding where she can actually make a cooked meal, a proper cooked meal for her children. And then you'd find that she'd also have to buy these ultra-processed foods and feed those to her children. So yes, it is also having quite a negative impact on that.
Yeah, and it's gonna be there for a while. It's gonna linger into our future, will it not?
Yes, it is gonna quite linger into our future, because the thing with obesity also that we also need to understand is that it's not something that can be reduced over a few years. It's something that takes long. And when you have all these other negative things, such as load shedding, such as ultra-processed foods being readily available, it increases these rates so much. And it's when the health promotion levy, for instance, is not being increased per year as Treasury had promised, it almost becomes less effective to trying to fight with obesity, especially in children in this country.
Yeah, and then there's the high cost of healthy foods. Why? So the main cause of overweight and obesity among young children is the consumption of high-calorie diets, those that are rich in salt, sugar, and fats, like Eunice Monso, who's Healers Project Assistant, has shared with us, but also influenced by other factors, such as household poverty, coupled with a high cost of healthy foods. Is little food gardens something that is part of the response that is required to this problem?
Food gardens is quite, like we like to say in an organization, food is a political issue. And when we come to the issue of food gardens, then we also come into land issues, we come into water insecurities.
If you've got a shack, you don't have a garden. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes those people, you find that people in poor and vulnerable communities don't even have running water in their own gardens, where they have to walk for miles, for kilometers just to find water. Or in some villages, they don't even have access to that water. So it becomes quite a challenging and a tricky situation, really, when we try to speak or to even think of speaking about food gardens, because there's so many other political challenges related to it.
Somebody sent us a WhatsApp. It reads as follows, Eunice. I don't know if you are capable to speak to it, but we'll put it out there. There is more harm in non-nutritive sweeteners, more scientific evidence supporting this. As discussed in John's show, John is a colleague of mine. I feel the sugar tax is criminal. Consumers shouldn't be forced into buying these chemicals. I don't know if you understand that question. I'm not certain I do, Eunice.
I think this would be a question more suited for some of our researchers, our colleagues from the University of Western Cape, because I can't really speak on it as I'm not a nutritionist.
I don't. The last part is as well. I feel the sugar tax is criminal. Consumers shouldn't be forced into buying these chemicals. I don't have a problem with a sugar tax, but I think it should be ring fenced to be of benefit to the objective of nutritious diets, to especially the poorest of the poor. And it's not. It's just going into this dark hole, is it not?
Yeah, our challenge is that it's not ring-fenced, and we cannot really tell Treasury that, okay, ring-fence this money. But ideally, it would be ring-fenced to help with, for instance, subsidizing poor communities with purchasing healthy foods, or maybe having things like food vouchers where people can use those vouchers and actually buy healthy food.
Yeah, so those food vouchers will only enable the purchase of healthy food.
It would be ideal if that would be the case, because then we're trying to move away from the consumption or even the overconsumption of ultra-processed foods.
Yeah, I got you. And that is increasing. And what is ultra-processed foods, in simple terms? What would that constitute?
In simple terms, if I can just use this word, it would be junk food. So food which are processed and are packed with saturated fats, high in salt content, high in sugar content, and that would be ultra-processed food.
And that's the stuff that we're eating, isn't it? That's the rations and chips that we're having for lunch, breakfast, lunch and supper.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah,
that's true.
And there's additional kind of health challenges that comes with ultra-processed, especially meat.
So the additional challenges that come with ultra-processed foods is that South Africa, we develop non-communicable diseases such as diabetes, which is related with the overconsumption of sugar-sweetened beverages and sugar, and cholesterol, because we eat foods which are saturated with so much fat.
Yeah.
And things like heart disease and stroke, which is a result of these, of diabetes and sometimes also of hypertension and other cancers, you know. And yeah, many other, maybe that I might not have mentioned, but a lot of challenges come with consuming so much ultra-processed food.
And we're seeing early onset of, you know, things like diabetes as well, which we haven't seen to the extent that we're seeing it today. So this is a pretty serious problem, and that's why we are discussing it. Just another message in for you, Eunice. The other problem is that food labels on really cheap food is non-existent or confusing or lacking. We need bold and clear front of pack warning. It will help more participants correctly identify unhealthy products. Is that part of Healer's strategy?
Yes, it is. And just to mention, the regulations have been released from the National Department of Health yesterday and are open to public comment now, which is something that advocated for simple, easy to understand and easy to read food labels in front of these packaged foods that we eat. You know, a simple sign that will say this certain food is high in sugar, high in saturated fats, or high in salt, because honestly, we do not understand the labels which we find behind our packaged foods. And it's also like very small printed, and the language that is used is scientific and hard for us to understand. So it'd be better for us when we have front of pack warning labels, which are easy to understand, then it will help us in making our purchase choices. The food we eat.
I would suggest that a lot of people wouldn't understand high in salt, high in sugar, high in unsaturated fats. Maybe it should just scream at you, this is unhealthy, don't buy it.
Yes, that would be an easy option too. But another thing just related to that is that sometimes some, you know, industry claims that some of these foods are healthy. You might find that they say that a certain food is high in fiber or low GI or things like that. And you'd think that, okay, this food is healthy then. But what they would neglect to say is that this particular food is high in sugar or high in fat. You know, so it's also quite tricky with just saying, oh, this food is healthy.
Yeah, I got you. Health advocacy group HeLa has been promoting and advancing the right to healthy foods. And Eunice Monso, my guest, HeLa project assistant. There's a voice note or two in. Let's take a listen, Eunice.
Good morning, Clarence. No, so nice to have you back. You have very interesting subjects to talk on, and it's really, really nice. Clarence,
thank you.
Do you remember who that health minister was who promoted sugar gives you go? Doesn't that explain everything now? Thank you, Clarence. Bye-bye.
So who was that health minister, Eunice?
I honestly cannot say who. I'm not sure who that was.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but it does ring a bell somehow. But you know, at one particular stage, and there was let's not go there. There were scientists that were saying smoking was healthy for you because, you know, they were paid to say that. But let's take a listen to the other one that you wanted to play, Joe.
Okay.
So, hi, this is Simon here. I'm just listening to the discussion regarding the sugar tax implication and the person who said that it's criminal. I agree wholeheartedly. I think if you consider what manufacturers in the beverage industry have to do in order to get their recipes right and at the same time evade a sugar tax, and then use artificial sweeteners, I feel that that's more detrimental to your health than natural sugar. And I think this discussion has got a bigger scope from the point that it's not just about what you consume, it's also what you do. So if I run 10Ks a day, me drinking a can of Coke is going to have no impact, because my body will use that sugars in order to feed itself. But if I drink a 2-liter Coke or a can of Coke and I do nothing, the implications of that is devastating. And I think this is where we go to the discussion around PE in schools not being compulsory anymore. No physical education. There's no drive from our government to say society needs to do something from a physical point at a younger age, so that you breed that culture of exercise and active, healthy living. Thank you.
Arguing there for balance. Yes, it is more than just food. It's about a healthy lifestyle, is it not?
Yes, it is. But another thing is, right, when we say we're promoting a healthy lifestyle, yes, by all means, but we are more concerned about having an enabling food environment, protecting the food environment, you know, versus making industry, what they like to say is always make it an individual's choice. But how really can you make an informed and good decision if you flood it with, for instance, the marketing of these ultra-processed foods? And another thing we need to take into consideration is, I can speak for myself as a young woman in South Africa, just even going out for a run or exercising, right, with the high crime rates, we are more concerned about our safety. In rural areas or even townships, people are concerned about their safety. They don't even really have access to a gym membership. That's a luxury, right, for someone who's living in a township who needs to feed other people. So we're trying to move it away from it being an individual choice, but pushing for the government to protect the environment in which that we live in, and particularly the food environment.
Another WhatsApp message in which I think is important. It reads, for listeners who don't know the difference, it may be useful to specify that type 2 diabetes is lifestyle related. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune condition. So we're talking about lifestyle related. We're talking about food habits with diabetes or type 2 diabetes. Is that correct, Eunice?
My physiology is not on par. Yes, there's the autoimmune one, but we're speaking particularly now about type 2 diabetes.
Okay. Yeah. However, type 1, could lifestyle be an impact there as well?
I think it could be. I'm open to be corrected here by...
Okay, let us not speculate on that one then. Somebody's suggesting that we just kind of differentiate, and that is great. You know, we can have the kind of policies that gets nutritious food to those that need it most. The bottom line is also that we are the most unequal country in the whole wide world, and some people have more than they need and other people have nothing. We need something's got to give, and we need to see a little more magnanimity. Does your organization also enable for that magnanimity from the rich to flow to the poor?
That is what we advocate for, because essentially what the health promotion levy is, and even just our policies, is we advocating for equity, you know, across board, all boards, and for poor people to have the same access to good nutritious food as the rich people do have, and at a price which is affordable for them, and someone who does not earn much, good nutritious food, with also the increasing food prices, is almost something that they might need to cut back on. So yes, we are advocating for that.
Okay, that's Eunice Monso from the HeLa, or rather HeLa Project Assistant. And as I said earlier, HeLa, the organization, is a coalition of civil society organizations advocating for equitable access to affordable, nutritious food in South Africa by building a more just food system. We appreciate you, Monso, and, or rather Eunice Monso, and the HeLa Project.